course, Will said bitterly. We came up a slope. Well, we're stuck. We'll have to hold them off, that's all. After a few seconds, and the first children were crowding in through the door, the sound of their yelling echoed in the temple and rang forth the wildness. And then came a gunshot, enormously loud, and another. And the screaming took another tone. And then the stairs began to shake as the first ones climbed up. Lyra was crouching, paralyzed against the wall. But Will still had the knife in his hand. He scrambled over to the opening in the floor and reached down and sliced through the iron of the top step as if it were paper. With nothing to hold it up, the staircase began to bend under the weight of the children crowding on it. And then it swung down and fell with a huge crash. More screams, more confusion. And again, the gun went off. But this time by accident, it seemed, because someone had been hit, and the scream was of pain this time. And Will looked down to see a tangle of writhing bodies covered in plaster and dust and blood. They weren't individual children. They were a single mass, like a tide. They surged below him and leaped up in fury, snatching, threatening, screaming, spitting, but they couldn't reach. Then someone called, and they looked to the door, and those who could move surged out towards it, leaving several pinned beneath the iron stairs or dazed and struggling to get up from the rubble-strewn floor. Will soon realized why they'd run out. There was a scrambling sound from the roof outside the arches, and he ran to the windowsill to see the first pair of hands grasping the edge of the pantiles and pulling up. Someone was pushing from behind. And then came another head, and another pair of hands, as they clambered over the shoulders and backs of those below and swarmed up onto the roof like ants. But the pantile ridges were hard to walk on, and the first ones scrambled up on hands and knees, the wild eyes never leaving Will's face. Lyra had joined him, and Pantalaimon was snarling as a leopard, paws on the sill, making the first children hesitate. But they still came on, more and more of them. Someone was shouting, "Kill! Kill! Kill!" And then others joined in, louder and louder, and those on the roof began to stamp and thump the tiles in rhythm, but they didn't quite dare come closer, faced by the snarling demon. Then a tile broke, and the boy standing on it slipped and fell, but the one beside him picked up the broken piece and hurled it at Lyra. She ducked, and it shattered on the column beside her, showering her with broken pieces. Will had noticed the rail around the edge of the opening in the floor and cut two sword-length pieces of it, and he handed one to Lyra now, and she swung it round as hard as she could and into the side of the first boy's head. He fell at once, and then came another, and it was Angelica, red-haired, white-faced, crazy-eyed. She scrambled up onto the sill, but Lyra jabbed the length of the rail at her fiercely as she fell back again. Will was doing the same, the knife within its sheath at his waist, and he struck and swung and jabbed with the iron rail, and while several children fell back, others kept replacing them, and more were clambering up onto the roof from below. Then, the boy in the striped t-shirt appeared, but he'd lost the pistol, or perhaps it was empty. However, his eyes and Will's locked together, and each of them knew what was going to happen. They were going to fight, and it was going to be brutal and deadly. "Come on," said Will, passionate for the battle. "Come on, then." Another second, and they would have fought. But then, the strangest thing appeared. A great white snow goose swooping low, his wings spread wide, calling and calling so loud that even the children on the roof heard through their savagery and turned to see.
"Kaiser!"
cried Lyra joyfully. for it was Serafina Pecola's demon. The snow goose called again, a piercing whoop that filled the sky, and then wheeled and turned an inch away from the boy in the striped t-shirt. The boy fell back in fear and slid down and over the edge. And the others began to cry in alarm too, because there was something else in the sky. And as Lyra saw the little black shapes sweeping out of the blue, she cheered and shouted with glee.
Serafina Pecola, here, help us! Here we are, in the temple!
And with a hiss and rush of air, a dozen arrows, and then another dozen swiftly after, and then another dozen loosed so quickly that they were all in the air at once, shot at the temple roof above the gallery, and landed with a thunder of hammer blows. Astonished and bewildered, the children on the roof felt all the aggression leaving them in a moment, and horrible fear rushed in to take its place. What were these black-garbed women rushing at them in the air? How could it happen? Were they ghosts? Were they a new kind of spectre? And whimpering and crying, they jumped off the roof, some of them falling clumsily and dragging themselves away limping, and others rolling down the slope and dashing for safety. But a mob no longer. Just a lot of frightened, shamefaced children. A minute after the snow goose had appeared, the last of the children left the temple, and the only sound was the rush of air in the branches of the circling witches above. Will looked up in wonder, too amazed to speak. But Lyra was leaping and calling with delight.
Serafina Pecola! How did you find us? Thank you, thank you! They were going to kill us! Come down and land!
But Serafina and others shook their heads and flew up again to circle high above. The snow goose demon wheeled and flew down towards the roof, beating his great wings inwards to help him slow down, and landed with a clutter on the penthouse below the sill.
"Greetings, Lyra," he said. "Serafina Pecola can't come to the ground, and nor can the others. The place is full of spectres, 100 or more surrounding the building, and more drifting up over the grass. Can't you see them?"
"No, we can't see them at all."
"Already we've lost one witch. We can't risk any more. Can you get down from this building?"
"If we jump off the roof like they done. But how did you find us? And where?"
"Enough now. There's more trouble coming, and bigger. Get down as best as you can, and then make for the trees."
They climbed over the sill and moved sideways down through the broken tiles to the gutter. It wasn't high, and below it was grass, with a gentle slope away from the building. First Lyra jumped, and then Will followed, rolling over and trying to protect his hand, which was bleeding freely again and hurting badly. His sling had come loose and trailed behind him, and as he tried to roll it up, the snow goose landed on the grass at his side.
"Lyra, who is this?" Kaiser said.
"It's Will. He's coming with us."
"Why are the spectres avoiding you?"
The goose demon was speaking directly to Will. By this time, Will was hardly surprised by anything, and he said,
"I don't know. We can't see them. No, wait." And he stood up, struck by a thought. "Where are they now?" he said. "Where's the nearest one?"
10 paces away, down the slope," said the demon. "They don't want to come any closer, that's obvious."
Will took the knife out and looked in that direction, and he heard the demon hiss with surprise. But Will couldn't do what he intended, because at the same moment, a witch landed her branch on the grass beside him. He was taken aback not so much by her flying as by her astounding gracefulness, the fierce, cold, lovely clarity of her gaze, and by the pale bare limbs, so youthful and yet so far from being young.
"Your name is Will," she said.
"Yes, but
why are the spectres afraid of you?"
"Because of the knife. Where's the nearest one? Tell me. I want to kill it."
But Lyra came running before the witch could answer.
"Serafina Pecola! Peckola!" she cried,
and she threw her arms around the witch and hugged her so tightly that the witch laughed out loud and kissed the top of her head.
"Oh, Seraphina, where did you come from like that? We were... those kids! They were kids, and they were going to kill us! Did you see them? We thought we were going to die! And, oh, I'm so glad you came! I thought I'd never see you again!"
Seraphina Peckola looked over Lyra's head to where the spectres were obviously clustering a little way off, and then looked at Will. "Now listen," she said. "There's a cave in these woods not far away. Head up the slope and then along the ridge to the left. We might be able to carry Lyra for a little while, but you're too big. You have to go on foot. The spectres won't follow. They don't see us while we're in the air, and they're afraid of you. We'll meet you there. It's a half-hour walk." And she leapt into the air again. Will shaded his eyes to watch her, and the other ragged, elegant figures wheel in the air and dart up over the trees.
"Oh, Will, we'll be safe now. It'll be all right now Seraphina Peckola is here," said Lyra. "I never thought I'd see her again. She came just at the right time, didn't she? Just like before, at Belvanger."
Chattering happily, as if she'd already forgotten the fight, she led the way up the slope towards the forest. Will followed in silence. His hand was throbbing badly, and with each throb, a little more blood was leaving him. He held it up across his chest and tried not to think about it. It took not half an hour, but an hour and three quarters, because Will had to stop and rest several times. When they reached the cave, they found a fire, a rabbit roasting, and Seraphina Peckola stirring something in a small iron pot.
"Let me see your wound,"
was the first thing she said to Will, and he dumbly held out his hand. Pantalaimon, cat-formed, watched curiously, but Will looked away. He didn't like the sight of his mutilated fingers. The witches spoke softly to each other, and then Seraphina Peckola said, "What weapon made this wound?" Will reached for the knife and handed it to her silently. Her companions looked at it with wonder and suspicion, for they had never seen such a blade before, with such an edge on it. "This will need more than herbs to heal. It will need a spell," said Seraphina Peckola.
"Very well, we'll prepare one. It will be ready when the moon rises.
In the meantime, you shall sleep." She gave him a little horn cup containing a hot potion whose bitterness was moderated by honey, and presently he lay back and fell deeply asleep. The witch covered him with leaves and turned to Lyra, who was still gnawing the rabbit.
"Now, Lyra," she said, "tell me who this boy is and what you know about this world and about this knife of his."
So Lyra took a deep breath and began.